Can you even begin to imagine what it would be like to be the head of a major utility company in these rapidly changing times? The pressure from many masters, the challenge of the everyday activity. Honestly, I cannot. So it's been an interesting journey for me and for our team, following the challenges that the utility company in our town faces every day. And when I talk about many masters, I mean many masters. Case in point, Tucson Electric Power is integrating wind and solar generation into the grid, and their plan is an ambitious one. By the end of 2021, which sounded so far away and now it's just around the corner, nearly 30% of TEP sales of electricity will be generated by renewable resources. And I remember 10 years ago with their then CEO, that was not the target, and they've upped it and upped in it. So how are they doing it? How are they transitioning power sources and equipment for this sustainable change? What kind of efforts does it take? Stay with me to hear some of the answers to that, how they are rising to the challenge and moving towards a greener grid. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. So truth be told, what TEP is working to accomplish is quite a bit from where I sit, and it'll take all hands on deck and lots of moving parts. I have lots of questions about their plans from how to get from point A to point B, so who better to have with me to talk about a part of that, not all the answers, I don't want Conrad to like run out of here, than someone who has worked in the utility business for 40 years, the last six of which have been with TEP. My guest is Conrad Spencer. He has worked in the power generation side of the electrical utility business for the majority of his career and has managed power plants and engineering slash project management teams for the past 29 years. So you have stories for me. He is currently the director of the Sunt Generation Modernization Project. And Conrad, I hope there's initials for that because I'm not going to say it anymore. For TEP, which of course I admitted I had never even heard of until I was preparing for the show. And to me, the fun of this journey is always learning something else that I didn't know about TEP and what they're up to. So thanks for being here. And I really do have lots of questions for you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's going to be fun. So my first question is, it's not one of the expected ones, but it's not stump the guest. 40 years ago, right? That's four decades ago. Did you have any idea in your crystal ball or knowing what you knew or looking into the future that we'd be on the race to the finish to get to renewables? Did you have a sense for that?
Absolutely the opposite.
Thank you for that answer. If you said yes, I'm going to say, oh, he's like a sightseer or whatever you call that, a vision, you know, a seer.
No, really the opposite of that. When I was in college in the late 70s and graduated in the early 80s, solar panel efficiencies were horrible.
Awful.
The cost per kilowatt of solar capacity was outrageous. And so those were little things that some researchers were spending a little time on, but there was really very little perspective of that being a major source of generation in those days.
Even 10 years ago, when people from TEP sat here and talked about the cost of a kilowatt hour for coal compared to solar, I didn't know if we'd ever get there. And things have really accelerated just in my journey as Mrs. Green. So now the next logical question is, and I am going to say it again, what exactly is the Sunt Generation Modernization Project, and how did it get that name?
Well, to really fully appreciate what we're doing, we need to back up to 2015.
Okay.
Internal to TEP at that time, Dave Hutchins looked into the future and really was a visionary in my mind as to what was the generation resource that we really had to embrace and capture and increase its capacity. And clearly, the future at that point looked to renewables as what the real answer was. And so Dave internally set some goals that all of us kind of took a gulp.
Did you kind of wince and like,
yes.
Dave, what are you thinking, dude?
Right. because he floated the concept of 30% of our retail sales by 2030 being from renewable resources.
Right.
And so the generation department under the leadership of Mark Mansfield, who was our vice president, took the assignment to begin to look at potential fast, flexible generation resources that we could incorporate into the grid to essentially allow us to balance the intermittent nature of the wind and the sun. And so that was the genesis for several efforts to reach out into the industry and say, what is available? At that point in time, we were very familiar with gas turbine technology, which is essentially the jet engine off of an airplane that you're very familiar with because it thrusts you into the air.
Right.
Strapped to the ground with a generator hooked to it. They were substantially faster than our steam resources, either fired by natural gas or coal. And so we knew that technology. We understood the technology of combined cycle units, which are very efficient models of a gas turbine and a steam boiler combined together. But once again, as we looked at those resources, we said, even those are not fast enough to account for the intermittent nature of the sun and the wind. To appreciate that, you say, well, why does it have to be so fast? The real-time nature of the grid is what has to be fundamentally understood. When a person turns a light on at their home or their air conditioner comes on, TEP, in concert with all of our interconnected neighbors, literally
grid.
Generates
yes.
the electricity instantaneously to compensate for that new demand. Vice versa, when someone turns the light off or unplugs their phone charger, we have to back generation off. And so we study all the time, how do we ensure that balance? How do we have resources that can respond very quickly to the very nature of the grid, that it's a constant balancing act? Well, as we looked at resources that potentially helped us integrate more and more renewables, the best resource and the fastest response were batteries. And so we entered into two purchase power agreements with two battery companies and installed two 10-megawatt batteries in the TEP grid here in Tucson. And they've been in service since 2017. And they have functioned well. They have performed well. But they last 15 minutes. And so we're learning from those, and we understand how useful they are in this balancing act of the intermittency of renewables. But as we looked at an interim gap need to really fill this capacity of fast, flexible generation as we integrated an accelerated amount of renewables, we had to have something that lasted more than 15 minutes. Batteries have improved since we entered into those two purchase power agreements, and we are going to be installing with another company south of the Tucson Airport a 4-hour battery.
Wow.
And it's 30 megawatts. So batteries have improved. The costs have come down. But they still weren't at a level that made it economically feasible to use batteries as the only resource for balancing the grid. And so in this pursuit of what else is available, it was somewhat back to the future. The internal combustion engine that we use in our vehicles today and all over the world to transport and trains and cars and so on and so forth and big trucks, we discovered that the engineers in Europe had upsized the internal combustion engine in all of the associated components of the internal combustion engine and made them really big and really fast and very efficient. And so that was the genesis for us saying, is that a project that would make sense for TEP to invest in to help us mitigate the impact of wind and solar on the grid, and the fact that when a great big monsoon cloud comes over and all of a sudden 100 megawatts of generation capacity from a big solar farm goes away in 3 minutes, and an hour later, it all comes back. And so the resources necessary to chase that kind of intermittency, we realized was in the internal combustion engine. And because it reciprocates back and forth rather than rotates like the old Mazda rotary engines. That dates me.
I'm with you.
We call the technology RICE, reciprocating internal combustion engines. And so in a very simplified sense, that's what we're installing, only they're really big and they're fast and they're flexible. So that's kind of the genesis of the Sunt Generation Modernization Project.
Got it. And basically, that's the big power plant off of I-10 in Alvernon.
That is exactly right.
That campus, that property.
That is correct.
Okay, so what will it do in terms of accelerating the process? Is it more fuel efficient? Is it going to reduce contaminants to the air? What are the benefits? Because it's not just moving in the right direction while you're waiting to be like, I tease the people at DEP. I'm friends with a lot of them, say, okay, when are we going to be at 50%? And they don't choke me, but I'm an environmental educator. But this is definitely, from what I have read, a big move in the right direction.
We believe that it is, and for the following reasons. We are retiring, in fact, units 1 and 2, two of the oldest steam units that were put into operation in the late 1950s at that
campus.
Were retired a week ago yesterday. So they have no pollution control equipment on them. They were grandfathered under the PEMA Department of Environmental Quality permit. That's just the way the regulatory schemes worked. Plants built in that era were essentially grandfathered the way they were built. And so there's no emission controls on them. They are gas-fired, so they're substantially less carbon-intensive than coal. Those were retired. That 160 megawatts of capacity of those two units is being replaced by 182 megawatts of the reciprocating internal combustion engine. So here's a perspective of the enhancement of the retired capacity versus the new capacity. The old steam units, if they were hot and were bottled up from a boiler standpoint, if we needed additional generation, it would take about 3 to 4 hours to bring them back online. Think about what I said about the monsoon cloud
no
and
kidding.
3 minute response.
Right.
So those kind of resources you had to just put on and leave on when the sun went away and then came back. The new resources can go from literally offline to 19 megawatts, 18.2 to 19 megawatts each in 5 minutes. So substantially faster.
Whoa.
Multiple start capabilities a day. It's like driving your car. You can start and stop your car as often as you want.
Right.
You change the oil based on the number of miles you drive. So unlike a gas turbine, which is start-based, that every time you start it, you put it through that thermal cycle, these reciprocating engines are hours of operation. So an enhancement in the maintainability, because you can start and stop them as often as you'd like. Now, our air permit restricts those starts and stops to 5 times a day per engine. So the fast, flexible nature of them are a huge enhancement over the units that were retiring or have retired. The nitrous oxide emissions and the carbon monoxide emissions are because each of these engines have, just like your catalytic converter under your car.
Right.
We have a great big catalytic converter that we call a selective catalytic reduction device. And we make it very efficient by spraying 19% aqueous ammonia up front of it. And so it removes 93% of the nitrous oxides that are created when you burn natural gas. And it removes 93% of the carbon monoxide. So when you take the total emissions from that site that you described at Alvernon and I-10, our total output of nitrous oxide emissions will go down 60%.
That's really good news.
So it's a substantial improvement.
Yes.
From an emission standpoint of a resource necessary to allow the integration of more renewables. It was interesting on that emissions front. In the permitting process with the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality, that the National Park Service played a role in that permitting process because we have two incredibly valuable national parks on both sides of us, Saguaro East and West.
Right.
And those are international drawing cards for this area. And so part of the air modeling that we had to do was to literally determine the impact that we would have to the visual eye of the sun rising in those two national parks.
You are kidding me.
No, that's just part of the process. When you're within 100 kilometers of a national park and you're seeking an air permit, you have to do that kind of visibility modeling. And so the National Park Service picked 3 or 4 spots in each park that a hiker would have a clear view of the eastern horizon. And then we ran models of, over the last 5 years, how many days they would have been able to see the sun. In other words, it wasn't cloudy or raining. And as you know, that's a lot of days.
That's a lot of days here, fortunately.
That's why we live here, right. The National Park Service determined, and they wrote back to Pima County Department of Environmental Quality, that with the removal of the two old steam units and the replacement of that capacity with these highly emission-controlled units, that visibility would improve. So once again, just a huge environmental benefit. If you're trying to integrate more and more renewables, you've got to have this fast, flexible generation resource. This kind of a resource is really a win-win. The last huge benefit, we believe, is that just like your car, this technology uses dry cooling. So we have a radiator. On rare occasion, you have to add a little bit of coolant to your car.
Right.
And that will be the case for us. So we have a great big radiator, and we pull air across it to cool the engines rather than the wet cooling tower
and
technology.
And groundwater.
So we will have a 70% reduction in groundwater withdrawal.
And that's really big. That's something to celebrate.
We think so.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm a tough customer. I have my environmental standards that I care about. But to me, that's significant. And, you know, what I was intrigued about having a chance to sit and have a conversation with you is you do have 40 years in the business. And one of the things that I talk about with some of my friends, like Francisco at TEP and others, is that the whole silver bullet mindset. There is no silver bullet. And I was telling him that we were on our way home from Taos, and we saw all these, you know, the one arm of the wind turbines on the interstate, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, that's probably going to where we're building wind farms in New Mexico.
That's right.
And my point in bringing that up is, none of these transitions are a silver bullet. There's manufacturing, which is big. There's land acquisition, there's solar installation, there's wind installation, and it does take time. And I'm happy to see the acceleration of that, but there's that reality of you can't just say we're going to have all solar by 2021, which wouldn't that be beautiful? But it's not going to happen anywhere. And to me, what I really need to see and believe, and there's evidence for, is all this forward motion that benefits our community. And I'm friends with Beth Gorman from, and she puts up those alerts, the air quality alerts. So this will help with that too.
It will.
Because Pima is always right button up against it for lots of reasons. So to me, it's an integrated benefit. And I always want to say, when I said that I would not like to be in Dave Hutchins' shoes because he does have the Arizona Corporation Commission, there's that I didn't mention, and the parent company and the customers, the consumers, the environmental groups, there's a lot to have to really figure out as we move to a more sustainable planet. I mean, there's a lot at stake too. When you talk about the benefits. So I have to ask this because I do. I'm Mrs. Green, right? What's the big picture plan for the coal generation facilities? How quickly can they be retired? I know you're making progress on that front too, but again, it's complicated.
It is. And the month of November was quite a month.
For retiring? I did not get invited to any of those retirement parties, I want you to know.
So TEP was a 7.5% owner in the Navajo Generating Station in Page. It was operated by Salt River Project. It was the largest coal-fired power plant still operating in the western United States. That facility was retired about 2 weeks ago. And so that coal generation is out of the mix for all of the utilities that were party to that. And so that big resource was retired. In 2022, TEP's ownership of 50% of the San Juan Unit 1, which is about 170 megawatts of capacity for us, which is located in the Farmington, New Mexico area, the Four Corners region.
Right, right.
You mentioned you were in Taos.
Taos, yeah.
So just north of that. That will be retired.
2022. Okay.
And then the Four Corners units 4 and 5 ownership that we have will be retired in 2031. So if you look at the perspective of how much of our energy at TEP will be generated in 2021 versus 2013. Here's a dramatic number. In 2013, 84% of the kilowatt hours delivered to homes in Tucson came from a coal-burning power plant. In 2022, that number will be...
kind of like drum roll,
48%.
48%. So it's really almost half.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's a dramatic drop and will continue to drop as we continue to retire our coal generation assets. Literally, from a fuel sustainability and resiliency standpoint, the goal at TEP is to be in 2023-2024 timeframe about a third. So a third from coal, a third from renewables, and a third from natural gas. What that does is it provides rate stability to our customers because you don't have a huge shock in rate base because you have not installed technologies that are very, very expensive, and you've reserved the ability under very extreme conditions to have essentially a full gallon of water to drink when you're really thirsty. So coal can be put on the ground at a coal-fired power plant, and it can storm and wind, and you still got a fuel resource. Gas is more susceptible to interruption because it's in a pipeline. the renewables are dependent upon the sun and the wind. And so that balances those perspectives and allows us some very good resiliency to climate change effects and things of that nature, because we can weather some of that type of storm event and still be able to serve our customers.
You know, I sit here and I know enough to be dangerous, but it's complicated. And that's what I learned on this journey. And I'm really speaking from my heart right now, is that when I started, it's like, why isn't TEP doing more? Why aren't they doing it faster? Blah, 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 blah. And I've evolved because it is complicated. Let's be honest. Even in terms of, if you want to get down to the, you know, the nub, even in terms of qualified workforce, there's all of those complications that I was with one of the board members of Pima Community College yesterday for a meeting. And, you know, getting workforce ready, workforce development in a state where education is not highly ranked nationally, there's a lot of complications. So to me, I'm applauding any effort that I see, and I've seen a lot when like I said, 10 years ago when I started this journey with TEP, it was a whole different story. So this is kind of like not a stump the guest question, but you have history. So do you still hold out hope, and I can answer for my own self, that even with all these projections and the movement, the forward motion, everybody in this industry is still working for quicker, shorter, faster, cheaper. So those numbers could even improve.
They could. And that's the beauty of technology. I saw a chart here recently that refers back to my comment of the late 70s when I was in college. And it showed the cost per kilowatt of a solar panel's ability to generate electricity. And it showed that the number back in that day was about $1,000.
Oh my God, and today, for a kilowatt hour?
Yeah. And today, that's down in the, you know,
In the cents. Yeah.
4 or 5 cents, maybe even lower than that.
Right, right.
Now think about that. $1,000 versus 3 or 4 cents.
Yeah.
So that, in many sense, in my mind, is a projection of as we continue as a society to look for ways to minimize carbon footprint, there will be new things come. There will be advances made. As I said a minute ago, TEP, we believe that batteries really are the fastest and most efficient way to balance the grid with the intermittence of renewables.
Storage.
But what you have to realize is that you have to have a lot of additional capacity of renewables and then store all of that for those 3 days when the sun doesn't shine in Tucson, which are not all the time, obviously, but they do happen. And so when you balance all of those economics, will there be a way that something somehow will provide even a better way to balance the grid and use very, very low carbon resources to do that? I think the answer is very clearly yes. But we have to deal in today.
Yep.
We have to keep the lights on today. And so this investment of these 10 reciprocating internal combustion engines is a step to help us bridge to the future. And that's really how we view it. It's a step away from much more polluting resources.
And a step towards.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, it really matters. What do you think are, you know, and I wanted to go back to this, because we sit here and we say things like, oh, that plant got retired. And yet, you know, 2 weeks ago, I interviewed this wonderful man, Joe Seidenberg, who's from the Red Feather Project up in the Navajo and Hopi area. And those sentences need to be looked at too, because what that meant for the Navajo is devastating. And I was still in favor of it. I wish that there were silver bullets where there was re-education, on and on. But even so, as much as I think it's a better step for everyone because we all breathe that air, it's still complicated. It affected a lot of lives of people that had steady jobs. And even if it was only 50 people, when your community is 400, that's a lot. And I forget what the numbers were. So, you know, to me, if there's anything I've learned in the past 10 years is it's complicated. People ask me things all the time and I look at them and I have this look where I'm like, I'm not trying to think up the right answer. I'm just trying to tell you it's not a one sentence response. There are lots of moving parts to it. And you solved the mystery for me for what the SUNT Generation Modernization Project is. And that is very, very encouraging to me. Is there anything else I missed? Because I wanted to understand that. And I know what the benefits are. I don't want to miss anything. I mean, Francisco was smart in having you come in because you definitely have that engineer mind that can explain it to a layperson, which is what this show is all about. What it means in metrics and numbers and measurements. But if there's anything else that I missed, it's your turn to say, Gina, there's something else I want to add here.
Well, I think the last thing that I would add is carbon intensity is all about how efficient a device is at taking an energy input and transferring it to another output. And so we engineers use efficiency to determine, you know, how good is a resource. Our steam plants were about 33% efficient at taking the either coal or natural gas energy and converting it to electricity. That's just the nature of the beast.
Okay.
The engines that we're installing will be 46% efficient in doing that.
Wow.
And so that's a huge improvement over the existing capacity, the capacity that we just retired. So that means that every time I do need that electricity from that resource, I'm 40% better at getting that resource from a energy source than I was, which means I'm 40% better at reducing the amount of carbon that would have been produced.
And everybody has to press pause and listen to that, because in this world that I live in and I'm immersed in and I eat, drink, sleep it, we have to look for good news and forward motion. And I have friends who live in the Bay Area. Thank goodness I don't, because it's, they have, you know, we don't say it lightly, but it's first world problems for them. But for the low income and the marginalized community, it can be life threatening when PG&E turns their electricity off for 2 or 3 days and all, you know, hospitals and facilities like that. And we can't even have in this conversation the extreme weather. I mean, it's so everywhere. We have two of our team members. One lives in Massachusetts and the other in Michigan. And I feel like the mother hen. And, you know, they're my age. One of them is older than I am. And I'm like, do you have generator? Do you have backup? Because you watch Lester Holt and you see, what, 24 more inches in Michigan? And you look at Lake Superior and how they're paralyzed in Massachusetts. And we are going to see the extreme on the other end. Hotter days, melting tarmacs, and all that stuff. So anything we can do to move into a safer and cleaner direction, because safety it's safety of our lives is the way I look at it. So I'm a proud partner of TEP, and I don't have all the parts yet, but I see so many good things moving, and if I have a problem, I call Joe Sokalski, and I say, Joe, this is what people said to me at a dinner party. Can you answer this for me? Because I didn't have the answer. And that's what I invite people to do. Ask questions, find out more, and be happy you're not in hot seat. And, you know, the partnership that was announced it's now probably 2 months ago with TEP and the U of A, that's big. That's a big, big, big step to go to zero, net zero. I can't wait to see how it happens. And I love those guys at the U of A. I love having them on the show. But that is another goal to shoot for that helps pull this community in the right direction. It's big. It's big. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. I learned a lot again. And I always have a few last words. When I read about utility companies moving up their projections for more renewables, I'm a happy camper because I know what fossil fuel does to the planet. And when I read about entire cities committing to 100% renewables by dates in the not-too-distant future, I know that it's really good news for all of us. I'm also realistic enough to know that it's not as easy as flipping a switch, which I mentioned. The journey to 100% renewables can't get here soon enough as far as I'm concerned, but I'm confident that my utility company, because I'm a citizen of this community and I care deeply, I'm confident that TEP is pulling in the right direction, and that really matters to me. So Conrad, thanks for being here, getting my IQ in the energy efficiency world up a little bit. And as I always end every show, thanks to all of you, our listeners, because without you, there would be no need for me. And I love doing this and sharing the word. And I hope people take the time to listen to the whole thing. So thanks for coming.
Absolute pleasure to be here.